This episode of the Inside Running Podcast is proudly brought to you by the Hobart Run the Bridge Fun Run, which is coming up on February the 23rd. Entries are now open. So far, this year has been the fastest and the richest 10K road race in Australia. Can't make it live? Why not do it virtually? You could also win a trip to the 2021 edition if you choose to do that. Find out more information and enter online at hobartrunthebridge.com.au. This week on the Inside Running Podcast with episode, we've got a bit of a change. We tried to get a few people together at last minute, and it's probably my fault. I was running my mouth a bit trying to throw some names out there to get some people involved, but it's just Soph, Ryan and I this week. So welcome to the show, Sophie Ryan.
Hi, Brady. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Good, thank you. Yeah, it's good to hear from you again. Saw you last week in person, actually. Hardly see you in person, but down at Vic Myles Club 3K.
That's it. Hardly recognised you with no facial hair. I thought, who's this little 15-year-old coming towards me? Oh, no, it's Brady. Whoopsie.
A few people did make comment about that. Carly was on to me about shaving it, and I think I told you every time I give Hudson a little kiss, he kind of starts crying and gets a bit disappointed and hates life a bit. So I thought, there's no way I want to be that kind of dad, so shaved it all off. And, I didn't run any good, though. Didn't help my running at all. But anyway, that's all good.
Although, come summer, sweating up on the Murray, I reckon it'd be a bit nicer without a few layers of facial hair.
Yeah, true that. And it's always good to look young anyway, isn't it? Isn't that what we all aim for?
Oh, absolutely. Us girls are paying a lot of money in a lot of different ways to look younger, so if you can just shave down and look a few years younger, you're doing pretty well.
Take it. Hey, what's been happening in your life? You raced last week down at Vic Myles Club?
Yeah, so I think I mentioned on the podcast with Jess 2 weeks ago that I was just sort of I'm back training pretty solidly, pretty consistently, and just trying to throw in just a heap of shorter, you know, I guess I don't think fun is the word, but shorter fun stuff that doesn't require a lot of mental preparation and certainly not a lot of thinking. And I bowled out. I'm not really a regular at parkrun. I think I can count the number of parkruns I've done ever, but I'm just getting in the groove a little bit of just heading down to Albert Park Lake. So I did a park run 2 Saturdays ago, which would have been the first Saturday of November, must have been. Headed down there, we had a really rotten, wet, cold, windy Melbourne morning, but it was good fun actually. Splashing around in the puddles felt like a little bit of cross country. The old Albert Park Lake track doesn't drain too well, but it was good fun to run down there. And I wanted to get under 18 and ran a 17:58, which I wasn't disappointed with. And then I went down to the Tan on Melbourne Cup Day and bowled out a Tan time trial. So just some of this shorter, faster stuff, just to get in amongst it and just hurt for a little bit and just see what happens. And ran a 13:39 around the Tan, which I was pretty happy with. We were having a few jokes about the obstacle course that was Melbourne Tan track on Melbourne Cup Day, because it sort of felt like every dog, pram and animal child out on the track.
Yeah, but right.
That kept it, you know, you just had to keep looking ahead to the next little patch of obstacles to get through. And that was good fun, a really great event that Anthony DiCostella puts on every year for our club, the Old Zavs. And then, yeah, went down to Myler's Club Thursday night where you ran down at Duncan MacKinnon. And, yeah, I had a shocker too. So it wasn't just you. There was definitely something in the air. I don't know if it was I'll blame the cold, heavy track. I don't know. But I was happy with parkrun. I was happy with the 10 time trial. And yeah, I just felt terrible at milers. I was in the women's B race. And I think I came in sixth or seventh. I didn't even check the results in the end. That shows how I felt about it. I ran 10:36, which I was a bit disappointed with. And I never really thought I'd do the Vic 5K tonight. Like, it wasn't really on the cards. Because I am doing the 10K in Ballarat Sunday, and I just thought, I don't know, five kind of things in 2 weeks is getting a bit silly. And then I thought, look, if milers just blows my mind with where I'm at, then maybe I'll jump in. But it certainly did not blow my mind in any way. So I just felt really heavy out there. I felt really heavy in the legs. I couldn't get going. When I sort of heard the split at 1K and realised that there was a bit of work to do, there wasn't that, you know, kind of next couple of gears to go up to. I just didn't feel great. And then you just sort of get stuck in the, like, three laps to go, two laps to go kind of thing. But it was a good event. I'm really glad that they, you know, it was a rotten day, Thursday, all day down in Melbourne, and I'm really glad they, you know, didn't call the event or anything, because it's difficult to put on an event in those sort of conditions. But the team at Vic Milers did a great job, and it was still a great event. But yeah, just wasn't really my night. Mind you, I don't know if I'll ever get a night where I bowl out a great 3K, but good to be amongst it.
How do you go getting up for midweek after work kind of races, especially when it's raining and windy and stuff? Do you find that challenging?
Yeah, shocking. Yeah, and I hate, you know, like, luckily I had a really busy day in clinic last Thursday, because Josh and I went down to Lawn on Friday for a wedding. So we were, I wasn't consulting at all on Friday morning. So Thursday really filled up, and that was a good thing, because I was so focused. I was on patients and what was going on here that I didn't really have time to think about the night. And I wasn't really stressed about the 3K at all, like at all. But it really got to about 6 o'clock, and I mean, I know you were well on the road by then. You were halfway to Melbourne, but for me, I was like just leaving, and it was only then I was like, oh, okay, better have a quick coffee and like find a bit of energy and just, you know, get excited. And yeah, pulled up and it was pouring rain, and I was like, I don't even want to get out of the car. And it's, I don't know, that's the battle. That's the hard part, where you're like, come on, you can do it. Just rug up a bit, go for your warm up. You'll be right. You know, all this sort of self-talk. I couldn't be bothered. I couldn't be bothered. I did a little bit checked out. So yeah, I do struggle a lot with that evening stuff, and I don't do workouts at night ever. I never do workouts after, you know, 11 a.m. So it's hard for my body to get up, like circadian rhythms, and yeah, I find it really, really tough. So I guess it's lucky that my main event, or the events that I love, are mostly morning races, because that's how I'm dialed in, even from a gastrointestinal point of view, and just my rest patterns and my food and everything. I'm dialed in to run in the morning. And it's really challenging to switch and start thinking about running hard and running fast at night.
Yeah, so much in that. Yeah, I agree with all that stuff. And even like some of the people are racing at like 9:30, 10 p.m. And I'm like, I'm in bed. Like, my body is asleep every other day at that hour. It's and then expecting to go out there and run, you know, sub 3 minute Ks on a different night. It's an interesting one.
After a day of work.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, anyway.
In fact, every time I was throwing myself my little pity party about, oh, woe is me, this is so hard, I thought, you know what? There's a program that says there are blokes running the 3K at 10 p.m. So don't whinge. Get out there and do it.
Yeah, and that's it. Like, no one makes us do it, and here we are whinging about it. But it's just like, I'm a perfectionist. I was like expecting this like 25 degree afternoon, like in spikes, no wind, just sitting on a big train. And I don't know, like that visualization that you always put yourself through, you do that stuff, yeah. And then it's like, oh yeah, nah, this isn't what I was thinking. But anyway, yeah. We'll keep rocking up.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, like, listening, like, even talking to you last week and then listening to you on the podcast, I mean, I know you don't have much choice being in Echuca Moama and wanting to race in Melbourne and wanting to get amongst the state championships, but it's a massive effort of yours to do what you did, say, last week and what you're going to do later today and come down. I know you don't really have a choice because you want to race these races and you want to live where you live and you just take it for what it is. But I have so much respect for you getting in the car and slogging out those hours in the car to get to races to support our sport on a state championship level, on a, you know, even just a round by round kind of level. Like it's really, I mean, I've got nothing to complain about. I live in this town, you know, I live in Melbourne, I race in Melbourne, blah, blah, blah. I can run to a lot of the races. So yeah, massive kudos to you for putting in the hours outside of the races to, yeah, to get amongst it. I really respect it.
Yeah, thanks. I think I need that though. Like that's why we do all the training. Otherwise, you know, it wouldn't kind of happen like that. So now I'm like, hang on, you get up at these ridiculous hours to do all the work. You got to have a race on the calendar and something to commit to. I think it is a lot harder midweek though. Like I struggled a bit last week to get there and then kind of get home and get back in the routine and stuff. And I reckon probably I'd be at that stage soon. Like I know we lost on the Athletics Victoria winter season. We lost like the Coleman Relays a couple of years ago. So now we don't have any kind of close to us. And you think about all those towns like, you know, Swan Hill, Wangaratta, Chookamalama, Bendigo, whole kind of like northern Victoria, it makes it hard when they put events on the other side of Melbourne for us to get to Melbourne, then get through it and then get on the other side of it is a bit hard. But maybe that's something in the future that we can get something on it. And even like at an event in Essendon compared to Glen Huntly would be a huge difference for us. Like it's probably another hour and a half in the car through traffic. So yeah, hopefully if anyone from AV is listening, not a bad idea for us Northern Victorians.
And then you wonder why New South Wales athletics is where it's at, because New South Wales is, you know, double, triple the size of Victoria.
Yep.
So what about all those rural and regional people? Then Queensland, then, so it's, I mean, we've got it tough, the likes of you, Northern Victoria and that sort of thing getting around. And it's just like, well, there's that geographical challenge. It's no wonder the other states struggle so much because, you know, Australia's a big place.
Yeah, 100%. Big challenge. Hey, last week or 2 weeks ago after you guys recorded, Jess Stenson had a baby. That was pretty tight.
That was so funny. Yeah, so Thursday, it was literally Thursday afternoon, Jess and I recording and she was like, we talked about Vic Mitchell, her waters had broken. She'd very kindly shared that with everyone on her social media. And then the next morning was Friday morning. I got home from my run. I picked up my phone and there was a photo of a baby and it was next to Jess's name. And I was like, what? Jess has had her baby? And I've opened my phone. No, she'd taken the screen grab of Vic who'd posted her baby because we'd obviously been talking about it. I literally had this split second and all I needed to do was tap the photo and see that it had Vic's name at the top, but I hadn't done that. I just saw Jess's name, picture of a baby, lost my marbles, and then I messaged Jess, I go, oh my God, you scared the shit out of me. I thought that baby was yours. And then, so that was Friday, delighted, you know, I was kind of expecting Vic to have had it in that 12-hour, whatever, 24-hour period. Then Saturday, Jess and I wrapped up our Skype pretty quickly after the podcast. I said, look, I'll touch base with you Saturday. Had a few other things we needed to chat about. Rang her Saturday morning. She missed my call. She rang me back Saturday afternoon and we were just getting, it's sort of about 5:30-ish. Josh and I were just getting ready to go out for dinner. We're using a restaurant voucher from all the way back from Christmas. And I was like, Jess, I'm just on the way out for dinner. I'll give you a call back maybe tomorrow. And she messages me and she goes, oh, no, this is quite important. I was like, oh, shit. So I quickly rang her and she said, she said, look, when I spoke to you Thursday, I had no idea we would be having a baby on Saturday, but it was to be an elective cesarean and her obstetrician had looked at the hospital beds and just the way the hospital was filling up with the non-elective births and was sort of like, it's getting kind of tight in here. I think I need to squeeze you in. And she was well and truly full term. Everything was going well. And he was like, look, there's an opening on Saturday. Theatre's free. There's going to be a bed for you. Let's do it. And so they did. So that was, pretty amazing to think that 48 hours before she was just, I think she was telling us about that elbow in her ribs and sitting there chatting away to me. And she had other stuff on before and after our podcast, and then just gives birth to little baby Billy, and he's doing exceptionally well. So to Jess and Dylan, we extend huge congrats, and to Vic Mitchell as well.
Babies everywhere. I was just talking to you off air about check your Instagram stories and you just see all this baby stuff. And in the past, I just kind of keep swiping, not pay too much attention. Whereas now, because I've been there myself, I'm like, oh yeah, let's see what's going on here. This is interest to me. This is all good.
That's it. Yeah, it's relative. I know. I've got to be careful what water I drink and who I hang around with, because that's exactly right. There's babies everywhere.
It's
Exciting
super
times.
exciting and stuff, and it's going to be awesome to like now watch their progress, how they return to running and what's important for them and what events they target, and just seeing that comeback is going to be really interesting for both those people you just mentioned.
Yeah. And Eloise is not far off. She's due tomorrow. As we threw her name in the mix for this conversation, but it wasn't quite to be. But yeah, we wish Elsie and Johnny all the best. They'll be certainly sharing some exciting news, I would say, any day soon, would be my prediction.
Yeah, all good. Hey, you mentioned you're doing Run Ballarat 10K. Is that what it's called? No, Run for a Cause, Ballarat 10K. I did
Run
that
for a
last year, that's
cause,
right.
yeah.
Well, you called it Moose's 10K, which I don't think it actually is, but anyway, he'll claim that.
I think I called it Moose's 10K to a few people. I messaged Nathan Hardigan to come do a warm down with me and called it Moose's 10K. So, no, Run for a Cause, and it's all about raising money for Ballarat community, because even when you enter, you nominate where you want some of your entry fee to go to in terms of different charities and organisations within that community. So, yeah, I'm excited to do it. Got any words of wisdom for me? You took it out last year, didn't you?
I was just back from Berlin though, so I wasn't that fit. Had a couple of weeks off and just getting back in the swing of things. It's an awesome course. They start in Victoria Park there, pretty much do like maybe a 1.5K lap in there. Start on a bit of a downhill, which can be a bit dangerous if you're feeling amazing. And yeah, go across the highway to the lake, a lap of the lake, and then back in again. It's good. Big
Nice.
finish and shoot. Like if you're in a race for the win, you can do a bit of damage. It's probably a 300, 250 meter finishing straight with like trees lining both sides and stuff. It's kind of makes it out like a bit of a tunnel kind of thing. It's a really good race, good event, good feel. I'm disappointed I can't be there actually, because it'd be good to see how it's grown in just like a 12-month period. But
Course.
you gotta have a crack and stuff, like try to win it.
I'm definitely going to try. Like I've only done one workout this week, and that was quite intentional. And I'll have an easier day tomorrow and Saturday, so go in a little bit fresher. I'm definitely going to be trying for sure. I'm not going up there for a scenic tour of Ballarat. I mean, I've been to Ballarat so many times in my life. All my mum's family's up there, so I know Ballarat well enough that I don't need to jog around and take in the surrounds. So yeah, I'll definitely have a bit of a go and see what happens.
Have you checked the weather?
Well, I've got, what is it, like a low of 4 and top of 16. Although I've got Apple, I just use the Apple Weather app, and I reckon that's always wrong. So I always look at it and go, yeah, well, take that with a grain of salt. I did see
That's
a
four,
minimum of 4.
and it's not windy though. It's gonna be good. It'll be still, but it'll be cold. It's Ballarat.
I'm happy if it's cold. I just wind around the lake just doesn't really go that well. But
No, I don't think
if
it's
it's
gonna be
one full
windy.
lap, okay, one full lap where there's a headwind, there's a tailwind. Isn't that how it works? I don't know.
And you go the opposite way to the 15K.
Oh, do you? Okay, so anti-clockwise. Anti-clockwise.
Well, the way you go the first K in the 15K, if
Yeah,
that makes
gotcha.
sense,
That's
before you do that Yui.
yep. Anti-clockwise.
Good luck there. And your mates, Sinead and Ellie, they were at New York a couple of weeks ago. You guys recorded, I think it was 2 days before that kind of thing. You spoke
We
about
did.
top five as well, that one of them would get in the top five, and it happened with Sinead coming in fifth and Ellie coming in eighth. Did you get up and watch it?
I did get up and watch it. Yeah, I didn't set an alarm. I was really, really, really tired, but I didn't set an so I didn't set an alarm, but I just knew I'd wake up, around that time. And I must have woken up, I reckon they were 10 minutes in, and I woke up, checked my clock, quickly logged in, because I don't have Foxtel, but Mark Hayes, one of Sinead's great mates and training partners, had given me his Foxtel login, which he'd done for Doha. So shout out to Hazy, such a great guy. And I logged in and saw them at the front. And I was like, oh, here we go, which was pretty exciting. Went out to the couch, was watching it, and then they did give a lot of footage, a lot of airtime to the wheelchair race, which was great, except that there was no race going on because it was sort of pretty much decided. So it wasn't very exciting in terms of, oh, I wonder what's going to happen here. And then I was getting a little bit sleepy. So I did fall back to sleep at some stage. I can't remember what stage it was. So I missed a little bit of a chunk and then woke up again. And then by that stage, the men had started. And then the cameras were very focused on the men. And our girls were sort of out of the race. So I think I was drifting in and out of sleep. So I didn't watch it in its entirety, but I probably saw all up maybe about an hour and 15 minutes of it. And it was incredible. They're amazing. When I said top five, I knew Mary Catani was running, but I did not know one other person in the field apart from Desi and Kellen Taylor. Oh, and Robert Groner, who'd done Doha. So I knew three other people plus Mary Catani, three Americans plus Mary, when I put the big bold prediction out. And then when I saw all the Africans, I was like, oh yeah, I didn't really take them into consideration when I declared that our girls were going to both go top five. So considering that, like, I mean, I don't go back on my prediction, but I just had that much confidence in them. I was like, I don't care who else is in the race. I just think these girls are as fit as they've ever been. And yeah, they were remarkable. I did think they would have stuck together for a little bit longer. And then hearing both their recaps, I was surprised Ellie dropped off Sinead as early as she did. I thought they would be together till probably 30, maybe 32K. But, you know, that's not highlighting that Ellie was weak in any stage. It was just, you know, that's how the race panned out. And, yeah, they're both pretty incredible.
Mm. Hey, just on that, the mixed gender races, would you prefer like a marathon where the girls are amongst the boys, or you think it's good that New York started at a separate time?
I love the airtime. It's not all about airtime and Instagram photos and content, as Moose was joking about. It's not all about airtime, but it is really nice when the top female marathoners in the world get just some really good exposure and coverage and have the opportunity to be talked about and discussed by the commentators, because it's terribly difficult to pick through like if you look at the Chicago Marathon, they all go off at once. You often have six or seven lead women, maybe it's less, maybe it's more, in a pack amongst men, to actually sort of pick them out and then talk about them and then try and scale the camera back to try and get that next pack. Women just don't get, it's not all about exposure, but they just people deserve to know their names and know their stories and hear about them and learn something. And that is really difficult when they're all off at once. And it's an opportunity that comes about when the women do have however long they have before the men go. As an athlete myself, I'd obviously never be in that front elite pack. So I would personally much prefer to just be running with the blokes and hopefully tucked in a nice big group. But if I was the standard of Ellie, Sinead, you know, the girls that can run in that pack, I would love the opportunity to be in a women's only world major. It would be amazing. It would be absolutely phenomenal. And I like the way they do it. And I think it's really important. But I also like the way there's the difference between a New York and a London versus, you know, a Chicago, a Berlin, where they all go off together.
Mm. And no pacemakers as well for New York makes things interesting as well, I think.
Oh, so pure. It's great.
Yeah, just so pure. And as Ali said in that show, like not wearing a watch and just like the main goal was to be the inner lead pack and just beating as many people as possible kind of makes it, yeah, as you said, so pure.
Just such a Steve Jones kind of run. It's great. Yep. Well, go like, out and just race the person beside you.
And there are only 37 seconds between them in the end. Like when you listen to their recount of it, when Sinead kind of pulls away, it's, you know, Ellie pulled a bit of that back later on in the race, obviously, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Like when I was watching it and then tracking, if at one of those points in it you'd said there's only going to be 37 seconds at the end, I would have said, oh, really? Like, you know, and it just shows how strong Ellie is, that she stayed the course. And you know, she talked about those stretches of time once Kellen had pulled away, been on her own. And I saw a few Instagram stories of Ellie on her own, and that would have been tough. So I mean, to both of them, like it was pretty remarkable. And I loved the podcast series with Jules. It was so funny, and hearing their recap where Sinead got the daylight saving time mixed up and rang the concierge. Oh my God, I was in my podiatry room yesterday and I had my door open and I was just doing some scanning new patient forms in. And I was listening to it and I was laughing so hard and replaying it that our receptionist came in. She goes, "Are you okay? What are you watching?" And I was like, "No, I'm not watching anything. I'm just listening to this really funny podcast of this crazy Irish woman impersonating American concierges." Great.
I was the same. I was out in the bush just jogging, minding my own business and, yeah, actually laughing out loud, especially the bit where Ali got her finishing position wrong and was trying to claim to Sinead that she'd come fifth, and Sinead had to kind of let her know, you know, let her down a bit, just letting her know that she actually didn't come fifth because Sinead come fifth.
So. I mean, Sinead's like, no, I'm not third and you're not fifth, honey.
That was a good series because it was pretty raw, and I think having Moose hosting it and coaching Ali's interesting to hear that dynamic. And at the end of their episode, the season finale, they talk about, you know, kind of give us a bit of a look behind the curtains a bit why, you know, Ali wants to run another marathon. She wants to run a quick one, get a time on the board, because she almost seems a bit concerned that her time isn't good enough to make the Olympics, whereas you can hear in Moose's voice that he's pretty certain that she's not going to be running another marathon. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that was really interesting because I definitely hadn't asked Ellie. I never ask a question about what's next when, you know, the race has never been run. And I honestly had no idea what her thoughts and plans were. And, yeah, when I was hearing that, that was really, really interesting. And Moose was like, okay, well, like, we might continue this conversation maybe off air. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay, good chats. And he just shuts it down. Look, he's right. What he's saying is there's only six women in the history of Australia ever who have run faster than you. I think you'll be right. But if I can completely see where Ellie's coming from, like, doesn't want to get complacent and rest on her laurels and, you know, think that she's ticked a box when she's really aware of the depth in female distance running at the moment. And she's just playing the cautious card, and I can see that and understand why she's doing that. I think she's pretty safe. I'm a little bit in Moose's camp, but if I was Ellie, I'd probably just safety and security, I'd probably want to put another one on the board, but I think she's safe. And she raised a very good point that you do run that risk. You do a very big block of high mileage and, you know, you're at risk of injury, and then you've got to properly recover and hope to God nothing, you don't pick up anything, niggles, sickness, anything after the race, and then go again. And it's not going again in October, November. It's going again in August. So, yeah, it's an interesting conundrum.
It is, because you start throwing Millie Clark's name around, who was 18th at Rio. I think people underrate her Olympic performance there, and, you know, the Gold Coast one as well. Like, she could almost do anything, and Lisa will go again, of course, and then you start throwing Jess around, and five doesn't fit into three.
That's it. I think, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, I think I heard Millie's doing Houston.
Yeah, you heard that on our podcast.
Oh, shit. Okay, cool. Yeah. Sorry.
So I'm allowed to say it. Yeah. I think I read that in Dane Verwey's blog. I think I saw that somewhere. He was training over there with her. So, yeah, she ran 72 over in the States for a half on the weekend. So that's, you know, a long way off what the other girls are running, but not sure if that was a marathon pace kind of run or back from altitude or what it was. But, yeah, expect to see some big things from her in Jan, I think it is, Houston.
Yeah, January. Yeah.
So, yeah.
All the best to Millie.
It's going to be good to watch it unfold. Hey, the other big story of the week, and one that we'll discuss more in detail when we've got a couple more female kind of co-hosts on the show, because I've already kind of spoken about it a bit on our podcast, but it was Mary Kane's story. And personally, it probably opened my eyes up a lot to the systematical problems in our sport, in particular like women's sport and hitting the correct weight. And another thing for me was like the lack of female coaches and like specialists in kind of distance running groups as well, how it's a kind of male dominated coaching world. What were your thoughts when you first watched the New York piece?
Yeah, it was pretty amazing, and amazing in terms of just, yeah, opening our eyes to a problem that we know is rife in our sport, and doesn't matter, you know, which country you're in and which distance you're running and who you're coached by and what shoes you're running in. It's it is such a huge issue in distance running, particularly amongst the females, but absolutely in distance running. And Mary Kane was incredibly courageous to come forward and approach a New York Times journalist in Lindsay Krause and ask to share her story. And Lindsay took up the challenge of conveying Mary's message, but she said I listened to a podcast that she was interviewed on, and she said, I did not think that a topic that is so common in that, you know, young female distance runner struggling with body image in the face of feeling like she's not thin enough. She just did not think that this sort of narrative would get picked up, because she said it's so common. It is common. But the way in which they, allowed Mary to share her story, which she so courageously did, it's so important that we talk about it. And it's if one good thing has come from it, it's that we are, you know, it's really been put in our face in a little bit of a confronting kind of way. And as you say, you feel a bit crook. And now, you know, look at us. We've just logged on and now we're having a conversation about it that I hope people will maybe listen to and then talk a little bit more openly and freely about it. I mean, the issue is nothing new. It's not sensational. We've heard this narrative before, but when it's packaged up with a Nike bow and stamped with Alberta Salazar, people start to take notice. And many of us, we have been trying, or we've been trying to have this conversation for so long, because it's not a new issue in our sport. It's one that needs, with no stigmas attached, no judgment, and just a lot more open discussion.
So, yeah, when you say so common, though, like, I don't know, maybe because I'm male and maybe because I, you know, I'm a bit isolated and don't train with big groups and have females in our groups and stuff like that. But for me, it was a bit like, this actually happens. Like, you're kind of speaking there like, no, this happens all the time. This has just been, as you said, put a Nike and a Salazar kind of bow and stamp on it. Like, this is big. This is common.
Look, Mary talked about the abuse that she experienced when she was at Nike. And I mentioned to you briefly yesterday that, Mary has highlighted a serious issue at Nike, and certainly within the Nike Oregon project involving Salazar. But that's not the issue, or at least it's not the issue that I think we should be particularly concerned about, you know, especially down here in Australia. I don't feel like I or you or we or our podcast or our running community can affect change within Nike, but we can certainly pull out the themes that Mary Kane has, you know, so courageously raised, and we can think about where and how we see them in our sport. Because as a female distance runner, I see these issues, I hear about them, I know exactly what Mary was referring to. I can't relate to the abuse that she experienced, and I don't see that level of abuse within our Australian distance running circles. But the idea of feeling like I have to be thin, I have to be thinner, I have to be the thinnest to be good at my sport, to be successful, to run fast, that is rife throughout our sport. That is everywhere. And you're not naive or ignorant to not know that this is going on. And I do think it is a little bit more common in females. The statistics tell us that it is. But it is. It's disordered eating disorders are rife throughout the sport. And necessarily encouraging it, but not really addressing it, they're not as guilty as someone like Salazar, who was so brutal to that poor girl. But the issues of feeling like you need to be thin and thinner to do well in sport, they are the issues we need to be talking about, and they are the issues that we need to confront and face and have more discussions about. In terms of the systematic, you know, faults or issues at Nike, I don't really care about them. It's not my business. It's not my issue to deal with. Like, that's a cultural thing that I can't affect change in. But we can absolutely look at girls in our community, in our running circles, who are struggling with body image issues, and we can reach out to them and help them. And I think that's where this, you know, it's, we need to look at the far bigger picture. And I think, I honestly think Mary Kane is the type of character who probably doesn't really care whether you go out and buy Nike shoes. She's not really having the absolute stab at Nike. It's, and this is not really about Nike. This is about the much bigger issue that's been raised.
Yeah, like fixing women's sport.
Yeah, just understanding what healthy looks like. So yeah. Healthy is, comes in all shapes and sizes. It's not necessarily, it's just, healthy is what, healthy is the level at which your body can perform at. It doesn't, it's not a number on a scale. It's not measurable in those sorts of ways. It's healthy hormone levels so that you have a regular healthy menstrual cycle. It's a body composition that means you don't get injured, you don't get sick. I mean, we all get little niggles here and there and coughs and colds, whatever, but you're not breaking down. It means you can live your life every day, go to work, be a daughter, be a sister, be a partner, sleep at night, eat whatever you want to eat when you want to eat it. Like, healthy is whatever number, whatever body composition allows you to wholeheartedly live your life. And if that's 10 kilos different to the girl on the start line, that's 10 kilos different to the other girl on the start line. Like, it just, it's not a number. Healthy is, it's not an appearance. So it's got nothing to do with the way you look. It is how you're, it's all about body function and mental well-being. That's healthy. And this idea that we all need to look the same, and when I say we, I mean men and women, we all need to look a certain way, we all need to be a certain number, we all need to fit into a kind of category or fit into a particular piece of clothing, it's such bullshit. It's, we need to promote healthy as being a way of life. It's what, whatever your body looks like, to allow you to do what you want to be able to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I was going to say, I've seen a couple of times, like, the importance on being a healthy person rather than focusing on, like, your performances. So it doesn't matter how fast you run or how many gold medals or world championships or whatever it is, especially in Mary Kane's position, because she was, you know, the best in the world there at one stage. And but she just wasn't a healthy person. Like, performance doesn't matter unless you're healthy and happy.
Absolutely. That small window of your life, that opportunity to win those medals and put those times on the board, it's finite. Like, it's such a short window of your life, and people don't remember those things, but they long remember the person that you are and the way that you left the sport and the people that you met in along the journey and then everything that's to come. So the performances are, it's what we strive for, and it's what, you know, it's so satisfying. It gives so much direction and purpose to what we do, but it's got, you know, the person that you are is just so much more important than the performances that you put on the board and the records that you retire with, you know. Yeah, and that's why I was just going back to, what does healthy look like? You know, just the idea that, as Mary talked about, and I'm not going to harp on about Nike and Alberto because that's not the issue here, but it just, oh my gosh, it just blew my mind. That poor girl, you know, he put an on her weight that she had to hit, and then weighed her in front of people to stress the importance of hitting a number. It's such an archaic way of coaching. It's such an archaic philosophy that a number on a scale has any relevance or definition as to how you perform. Like, it's so perplexing that any male or female coach would still be caught up in the idea that being thin or thinner improves your performance. Like, it's just perplexing that with all the proven literature, all the information, everything that's out there, there is still a lack of understanding around hormone. It's a very, very archaic coaching philosophy to be discussing body image or composition as performance. Like, I get it. If you know, enormous, we get that there's sort of a power to weight ratio thing going on here, you might need to trim down to be have a healthy BMI. like, I'm not talking, but that's the extreme. I'm, you know, it just blows my mind that someone, a world-class coach supposedly, does not understand what health actually looks like.
Well said.
Or how it's defined.
Hey, what did you think about the response online? Like Shalane Flanagan kind of come out apologising that she didn't do much about it, and all she didn't know it was that bad. And Jenna Kaz put some good stuff on about having a role model who's female as well, talking about Eloise Wellings. What did you think when you saw that stuff kind of pop up?
Yeah, and absolute, like, hat off to those women who had the courage to speak out, because that's exactly what we want to do. And these women have huge followings, both online and just, you know, naturally a lot of men and women who look up to these people as role models. So I absolutely take my hat off to them for speaking up and being so honest and true. And that's why I don't berate a system like Nike, because I know nothing about what goes on over there. So I cannot be critical of their system. But, you know, it's such an enormous juggernaut that you can't just, you know, say that every single person within that organisation is guilty of this. And, you know, then you look at a Shalane Flanagan, who I'm an enormous fan of, and what they have worked so hard to nurture and foster at the Bowerman Track Club, and the positive body image, I think, in my personal opinion, that those girls within that group and boys are putting out. And then she put her hand up and said, "I'm sorry, I just didn't know this was going on." And that's fair and reasonable. She doesn't train with them. She's not in their group. She's not in, you know, you just, and I think the one other message that I've heard so many times throughout this is, how many girls have we lost, and boys, how many people have we lost who came out of college, you know, perhaps got signed to a shoe company, and have experienced some level of, you know, disordered eating patterns or an eating disorder, or this bullying by a coach or someone within the organization that has completely derailed their career and completely turned them away from the sport? How many people have we lost because they completely misunderstood, because of social pressure, they misunderstood to go about training and racing and achieving, you know, their full potential? Anyway, with your question about what did I think of those people, absolutely loved that they had the courage to speak up and speak some advice. And yes, I do think people would have read what they wrote and thought to themselves, you know what, yes, I will go and find myself a positive role model. And, you know, yes, there are some very good nurturing souls within our sport who hopefully have all learned, we've all learned something, but have learned something from this, and now will aspire to, just watch out for this more, I guess.
And the role of, like, more female coaches, like, after I was made aware of it, I started thinking about all the coaches I know, and yeah, they're right, there aren't many, especially elite female coaches out there.
Yeah, I know, you're exactly right. And you know, I feel sorry for, there are so many really, really wonderful male coaches and female coaches. So to touch on what you just said, yes, we are lacking in female coaches within our sport, 100%. I couldn't agree on that more. I don't really know what we've got to do about it, but we've got to do something, because nobody understands the female complex the way a woman does, and no one understands what a girl's going through the way a woman does. But I just want to say to all the wonder, if you gave me a pen and paper, I could sit here and write down so many names of male coaches who I know who I think are doing an outstanding job. So I'm not for one minute saying that all male coaches are like this, and we're absolutely, this is not about pointing a finger at men and making accusations about their capacity to coach women or the way they treat women or their ability to coach. It's nothing about that. We are lacking in female coaches who can really, really understand women. But I don't know what we do about that. Like, I think we've just got to try and encourage and drive more women who have had, who are wanting to move into a different phase of perhaps their career, and move away from the sport, to try and keep them within the sport. I think things like this will do great things to encourage more women to coach, but yeah, it's definitely something we've got a lot lot of work to do on, for
yeah.
sure.
It seems like the transition for men to become, you know, a leader or sub-elite athlete and then go into a coaching role, that seems to happen way more often than, because we've got just as many amazing female athletes out there, but less of them end up being coaches, whereas yeah. even the guys like at sub-elite and elite level at the moment who do coaching on the side, there's so many I can think of males who do that in Australia, and you can't really think of that many females who actually do it.
Yeah, I know, but it's just in coaching a girl, like a coaching a woman is just, it's so different. And it's like, when you think about it, and a girl, you are actually at a different, and this is, I having a really chat to Lydia O'Donnell about this a few weeks ago, and she was talking about, and it was a really good point that she raised of how we shouldn't compare. We've got to be careful when we compare sessions to other sessions. For example, 8x1K rep, and you compare with how you performed on this day compared to how you did 3 weeks ago. And it's like, oh, geez, I did so much better 3 weeks ago, but I thought I was so much fitter today. Oh, my gosh, my reps were like 5 to 10 seconds out compared to that last session. And she said that she does a lot of program writing and coaching, and she programs so that sessions – are more difficult to compare with, because girls every single day of the month. So what our hormones are doing on one day is completely different to what they're doing on a different day. And the effect that that has on your whole body and the whole, and the way that you sleep, eat, train, digest, all of that stuff is so, so highly variable that you need to just, I guess it's about managing your expectations, but comparing, you know, one session and how you did, you know, 6 hill reps in whatever time, with that same session a few weeks later, it's, I don't know, I think this is a very convoluted way of saying what I'm trying to say is, male coaches unfortunately don't really fully understand this. But I think female coaches do. And that's why coaching women is very, very different to coaching men. I think that's the roundabout message I was trying to get out.
Yeah, for sure. You got there in the end. Good work. Well, we'll leave that there. I've taken up enough of your time so far today. Good luck on Sunday morning down in Ballarat.
Thanks, Brady. Yep, you're heading down a bit later today?
Yep, I'm going to get in the car at 3:30, I think, because it was, race changed from 9:30 to 7:30, which is good for us in the country. So that's going to mean we get home a bit earlier. So all good.
Very good. Back in. So what? Which race are you in?
I'm in A grade. It's a pretty weak field, so I've slot myself back in there, which is all right. But anyway.
Right where you belong. That's good.
I'll be wearing the next percents this week. I think it was all shoes next week. That last week, that's what I'm saying anyway.
Yeah, chuck on the next percents.
Hopefully when people listen to this, I've just ran like 14:20 or 14:30 or something anyway, because this is going to come out after I've actually raced. So this might not age real well.
We'll see.
We'll see.
You can only be out there, you put yourself in amongst it.
Exactly. So thanks again for your time. Talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Good as gold. Thanks, Brady.
Thanks again to this week's sponsor, the Hobart Run the Bridge Fun Run. Entries are now open for that event, which is going to take place on February the 23rd, 2020. Can't make it live? Well, why not do it virtually? You could win a trip to the 2021 edition if you do. Find out more about that at www.hobartrunthebridge.com.au. See yous.